This is Future Water, where we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. Well, the recovery of the global markets from COVID-19 pandemic has resulted in what seems to be like a desynchronization, if that's a word, of supply and demand. It ranges from chemicals for water, wastewater treatment, to the delivery and cost of pipes and basic material inputs into the sector. So the squeeze is on, it seems. So today, we're going to talk with Bluefield's Nathan Goldstein about the impacts of these changes on the water sector. But before we do that, let's talk some quick news. Number one, Artesian Wastewater Management, a subsidiary of Artesian Resources, an investor in utility, agreed to acquire Tidewater Environmental Services from Middlesex Water Company, another IOU. They paid about $6.4 million for the acquisition. The acquisition actually is going to more than double the sewer customers for Artesian. So it's interesting to see that Artesian has made a big move like this. Tidewater was founded, I think, in 2005, and it was one of three utilities operated in Delaware that have been owned by Middlesex. So trying to figure out what's going on here, what it all means. These are, if you want to call them tier two, tier three players among the IOUs that we track and follow, but they are platform companies, if you will. They've got a big enough footprint that someone could build from. So it's interesting to see what they're up to as we track every quarter the investor and utility acquisitions and players. Number two, saw in the news, the application of digital solutions for utility and industrial water management has seen a 53% increase in project activity since 2016. So that means that digital water spending in top 10 key markets is forecasted to grow from $8.7 billion to $20 billion by the end of, I think, this decade. So global activity is putting the burgeoning sector at about a 10% growth rate annually, which is outpacing the broader municipal water sector as a whole. So it's interesting to see digital water growing so fast. And as a result, a host of telecommunication companies are trying to capitalize on this demand for digital solutions and just data transmissions from water utilities and industrial firms. So that's interesting. And I'm not going to lie to you, that came from an article that referenced Bluefield Research data. So just sharing a little bit of the love here. Then lastly, sort of news, just wanted to let everybody know that Bluefield has a client webcast slated for next week. It's called The State of Digital Water Markets, Key Takeaways from 2021 and a Look to 2022. By the time this podcast drops, it'll be pretty close to the deadline. But I think as key global water markets continue to recover from COVID-19, the digital transformation, it's really become a strategic priority for organizations, from utilities to corporates to investors and solutions providers. So our team, Eric Bendler, Nina Rossiter, talking to John Berryman about what's happening when it comes to digital water. So if you want to learn more about the webcast and all the ways that Bluefield supports its clients, whether it be corporate subscriptions, with analysis, we sort of with interactive data platforms, one-on-one meetings, whatever your cup of tea is, definitely let us know at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com. Just don't want anybody to miss out on some really interesting insights, both conversation, but also the presentation itself. So there you go. Three sort of news headlines, the Artesian deal, some digital water market forecasts, and just to let everybody know about the upcoming webcast. That being said, let's do it. Let's talk to Nathan Goldstein. All right, I'm joined here by Nathan Goldstein, analyst at Bluefield. Nathan, how are things?
Things are good, Reese. It's about to have our first thunderstorm of the season, it looks like. Temperature's gotten a little bit down further. Fall's around the corner, got some pumpkin patches to visit. You know, there's a lot of sunflowers also blooming, apparently, up north out of side of Boston. So looking forward to that, but things are good.
Nice. So you're in Cambridge, I take it?
Yeah, just Riverside, close to Harvard. The students are back, so my local coffee shop is now filled with undergraduates on Saturday morning trying to get their early morning coffees.
Nice. Well, yeah, that's what happens. That's in parking disappears around here. But those are, I guess those are champagne problems in Massachusetts, right? You know,
that's a fact.
Life is not all that bad. So look, Nathan, let's start with, you know, let's have a discussion about some research that you and I think Eric Benner were working on. It was a research note specifically on supply chains. We've had a lot of questions from clients about supply chains, what their impact is, or the myriad of impacts on the water industry, whether it be, you know, trucks, pipes, chemicals, you name it, seems like the list is long. So let's start with the basics. What did the recent analysis focus on, and do you have any quick findings or takeaways to start with?
Yeah, I mean, off the bat, it's not only been something our clients have been asking about, it's something we've been hearing about in the news, in conversations, in the mediums that I listen to on TV. You know, just the other day, I heard that if you wanted to get your Christmas shopping in and not have it arrive in February, order something now, if not yesterday. But I mean, getting back to the brass tacks and the basics, that it's been pervasive. You know, companies across the water industry have been feeling the effects, which have created both headwinds as demand soars from 2020 levels. You know, key raw inputs such as plastic, resin, iron, steel, copper, and like vital components such as semiconductors have seen double-digit price increases, you know, impacting firms such as OEMs, treatment chemical suppliers, and even metering firms. You know, as a result, though, the current supply chain disruption is driving our specific water companies to re-examine sourcing and pricing strategies and implement measures to increase resilience, building out their own internal supply chains, acquiring firms possibly. You know, but they're also seeing new opportunities to improve domestic and global supply chains against water-related risks, such as flooding and drought.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to go back to the beginning. Your comment about the holidays and presents is a whole nother matter. I'd really thought about the PS5 that might be on the agenda. I'm not sure. But yeah, but that's indicative, right, of how interconnected things are.
I mean, you think about how technology advanced a car is these days and how much a used car sells for, because there are not enough new cars coming off the lines. You know, my partner bought a car for 19 2 weeks ago, and now she's getting offers from Kelley Blue Book coming at 22, 23, because there's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, the used car market is crazy. And in my notes here, I have a comment. Well, we'll get to it, talking about supply chains and stuff and semiconductors specifically. So, all right, we've got a supply chain problem, obviously, and it touches probably every part of our lives now. Prices are rising. There's inflation for various reasons. Feels like every time I open the paper, there's another event happening, or whether it be a hurricane, a freeze, or a drought. Can you name, do you have some events that are indicative of sort of whether it be climatic or COVID-related impacts on the water supply chain?
I mean, before I run down the list, get a new newspaper, find something positive to read in the morning. But the list is basically, you know, we've got U.S.-based thermoplastic resin manufacturers were hit really hard by that Texas freeze. A lot of them were crippled, in fact, declaring force majeure across their entire operation chain. That shut down facilities that were, you know, struggling to get back to even pre-COVID 2020 capacity, which then, I mean, even drove up prices. I think we saw 60%, 65% between June 2020 and June 2021. Number two.
Well, hold on. And that would get into like PVC pipe or HDPE, anything related to the resins are required for, right?
Yeah. Raw plastic blocks. I mean, pipe, plastics, you know, molding, specific pieces in vital components. You know, we don't realize how pervasive plastic is in our life. So if you can't get the base manufacturer for that, you're going to run out of a whole lot of things as well.
Okay. All right. Nice. What's next?
I mean, the Suez Canal blockage. Everyone saw that. Evergreen, I think it was. Those backlogs at ports, which were driven also by COVID-related shutdowns and labor shortages, were really made crazy by that blockage in March. We've seen prices for containers anywhere go from around 1.5K to as high as 10K per container, with, you know, preference towards larger multinational groups, which means that water companies and their component suppliers are really hard pressed to find containers or even be able to afford them.
Yeah, there was, I was speaking to Eric Bendler yesterday. We were talking about containers moving back and forth between the West Coast of the US, like Long Beach, LA, over to China. And I think there are growing concerns, or there's a desire from Chinese companies to send those containers back empty, and they can do a quicker turn in China and send them back. So it's impacting actually exporters in the US. That was something he had raised. I know he had been having conversations with some. So yeah,
interesting.
Everybody, I've quite honestly, until you said that, I'd forgotten about the Suez Canal blockage. But okay, so what else?
We've got chronic labor shortages, and even the point you made about getting containers across the United States, there's a big shortage of truck drivers. We've seen that, like, you know, there's reduced amounts of availability. They've increased their rates, and it's been exacerbated by a fuel price inflation of about over 120% between June 2020 and June 2021. You know, we've heard from clients and we've heard from the radio, and I've seen on TV that, you know, they've been having to pay bounties. Truckers have been refusing to do long haul drives. You know, they want to stay close to home. And so they've increased their prices exponentially.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with now all the I don't even know what we call it, the government support. So the, you know, unemployment and things like that, all those funds ended basically earlier this month. And so will people start heading back to work? I do think there is a challenge. This is not a judgment. I haven't seen you in a long time, right? You're probably pretty, it seems like you're pretty comfortable working from home. So, yeah. With that being said, I mean, truck drivers are no different, right? They're just, you know, if they can sleep in their own bed every night, they're more likely going to do that or want to do that. So that's part of the inflationary prices. I mean, I think to that point, I shared something with the team. I was reading, I think it was Bloomberg this morning, and they had a brief article on a lack of truck drivers, lorry drivers in the UK, that there weren't enough to deliver chemicals to wastewater treatment facilities. And so therefore the Environment Agency they basically are allowing for discharges of partially treated wastewater because the wastewater treatment facilities don't have enough chemicals. So they're prioritizing certain constituents in the wastewater, but they're granting a waiver, at least for a period of time, until the lorry driver shortage wanes.
I mean, the Thames is like the Charles, a river I would never, ever want to swim in.
Well, yeah, ever. So no matter what they say.
Yeah, I don't know how those whales and dolphins do it, swing up the Thames there.
Yeah, but I think, you know, so chemicals, and I think, I mean, I assume you would mention even like a chemical facility and...
Yeah, to your point about chemicals and then just stuff in the household, that facility in the Northwest that had a fire, it made companies really evaluate their supply chain and looking at, you know, what the chemicals coming down were used for either wastewater treatment or, you know, at-home pool treatment. And as we all know, and our neighbors and left and right of us have been putting pools in their backyards at an all-time high. It's something that I've wanted, something that people want, and they've been doing it. So people are really evaluating where those chemicals are coming from. But then I guess my final point, getting a little bit back on track, is that something I saw really interesting that perked my mind up was that in Orlando, Florida's, there was an article come out about officials asking residents to limit their non-essential use of water for 2 weeks to preserve liquid oxygen, which is apparently a really vital component in treating severely ill patients with COVID-19. And also a vital component for water treatment. So I guess a really COVID-related impact would be that one itself.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing. All these things that are, you know, it's competition for resources, right? And I think there's more frequently, there's a discussion about, let's say in the Western US, oh, there's competition for water, just water supplies, whether it be between farmers and cities. Arizona is a good example of what's going on right now with the Colorado River. But there are all these necessary inputs to treat and provide water services and supplies. So, I mean, just a quick rundown of what you talked about. One, there's the trucks to get the supplies, the pipes, the pumps, the valves to wherever they need to be. And there's a price to be paid, increasing price to be paid for that. So if you want to call that labor related, that's part of it. Diesel prices are part of that as well. But then the chemicals, right? And I will say, you know, whether it be chlorine or other chemical treatments, chemicals, specialized chemicals for wastewater. And then oxygen, right? Everybody's like, oh, there's plenty of oxygen. Well, as we saw in Manaus in Brazil, they're running out of oxygen for COVID patients. But we're also seeing that in Orlando, which is a little scary. So yeah, it's maybe this is a good segue. So that's helpful, right? So all these different factors influencing what's happening in the water sector that not only buyers, but also sellers have to pay attention to. And so to that point, I mean, you mentioned, you know, semiconductors a little while ago, I think. One of the things I wanted to call out, I mean, I'd listened to a Decoder podcast. It was like an late August, August 31st episode. And it was called Everything You Need to Know About the Global Chip Shortage. I'm not going to lie. I loved it. Nathan, as you know, I listen to podcasts probably as much as anybody else, but outside of the industry specifically, because I love them. It's how I
get, if not a bit more,
it's how I get information. It's something, you know, I just wander around the house or town. I don't do it while I work, but I listen to a lot of them. And this podcast, I recommend anybody to listen to it, particularly if you're interested in water, because I think there are a couple of things that were brought up. You know, any chances for the U.S. to build out capacity after falling behind the Taiwanese company TSMC or Korea's Samsung, and when it comes to semiconductor manufacturing, is going to be really tough, if not impossible. They've been doing it for 35 years. So this repatriation of intellectual capital to the U.S. for national security reasons is going to be a tall order at best. The other thing that they talked a bit about, and I mean, when this is important for semiconductors, but I don't, outside of semiconductors and other aspects of the water industry, I mean, there are the ebbs and flows of inventory buildup that were actually created prior to COVID because of the U.S. tariffs on China. You know, I think, you know, the Chinese companies like Huawei, they were buying Intel chips that were coming out of the U.S. or other key components. And so they were building up inventories to protect themselves, right? Depending on what happened geopolitically. So that has had an exacerbating impact on supply chains as well. And then I think it's lastly, what I just to kind of put the nail in it at the end of the podcast, this Decoder podcast, one of the questions that was raised was, you know, why on earth do semiconductor companies continue to build fabrication facilities or fabs in dry places like Arizona? There are plans to do that in Arizona, New Mexico, I think Texas, but also even, you know, Taiwan just went through a drought. So it did relate to water. Really interesting, really fascinating. So now that we've sort of gotten through that, which I thought was interesting, what are these doing to material prices? So you mentioned a couple of things like diesel, but what about, you know, some of the raw material basics in water, these constraints, what's happened?
Before I jump into that, I do want to make a comment about, you know, we've been harping on semiconductors a lot, and I recently bought a desktop computer. And when I went in there, they were limiting purchases of vital components, you know, graphics cards, other really technically advanced things, to one purchase for one person every 30 days. Because people have been buying up so many of these parts to build their own computers that the prices have skyrocketed. Because the work from home component is that people are now, you know, decking out their systems with vital pieces. So even demand has skyrocketed, which means, you know, a tighter supply chain.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, it was kind of nuts. I wanted to build one, but the scalpers, quote unquote, have picked up, you know, like the graphics cards and processors. So to buy them like piece by piece, you're paying a couple K per piece. So pre-built's the way to go for right now. But getting back to the podcast, you know, you mentioned diesel and some other things, but things like copper, 56% up over last year's. Lumber and plywood, 97, 115, respectively. And then your more heavy stuff, iron and steel, up 73. You know, we're seeing this across the board, up 73%, sorry. We're seeing this up across the board. All these components, you know, everything from what you need to build the desk, what you need to build the house, what you need to build the car, they're all going up. But I think copper has come down a little bit in the past couple of days. I'm not quite sure if I've seen that correctly.
Yeah, I think there the copper prices started to soften recently. We were looking at the impact of copper on really copper and mining, or copper prices and mining in Chile specifically because of the desalination plant build out. I know there's some research on that coming out, but yeah, so it started to soften, I think partly because of China. China was slowing things down a bit. I mean, as I've said before, you know, China is the straw that stirs the drink. So, but copper obviously is used for a lot of different things like meters and, or, you know, the iron and steel, you know, things like construction for whether it be treatment plants. So what's ultimately going to end up happening is all these prices, it's going to sort of flow through the processes. You know, I think at some point, whether it be utilities or the engineering firms who are doing the procurement for these utilities and industrials for that matter, when it comes to water, they're probably getting a little bit skittish, right? You know, whether it be because change orders keep coming in because of prices, maybe if they can be deferred, I suspect we're starting to get signals that some projects are getting deferred if they can, just to avoid some of those higher prices. And it's not just material, like we talked a little bit about the trucking prices as well, just have things delivered. So, well, one of the things we do at Bluefield also is we look at sort of look at top companies in water, and we look at sort of what's happening in their quarterlies. What are the public saying? So are we seeing any impacts in company financials, or at least any key takeaways?
I know I keep doing this, but I wanted to make a point about your last comment there, like change orders and large orders being built. My partner works in the construction industry. At the start of COVID, all of their big projects were shut down completely. And it's only been the past like maybe month and a half, 2 months that they've seen projects come back up online, but contractors won't even give a quote on prices anymore, you know, because they can't decide, they can't give a 10 to 15 to 20% price range because prices change so dramatically and quickly that they just refuse to do that. So, but getting back to what we've seen in the quarterlies, sorry, I keep doing that. You know, we've seen in response to the disruption of climate change and COVID-19, like you said, that price increase being kind of diluted down the trickle chain. Water companies have implemented a range of sourcing and pricing strategies to mitigate really that shortage and inflation in the short term. Several public water technology and equipment manufacturers have passed that increased material price on to the consumers, us. We've seen raising prices in line with input costs. Companies such as Mueller Water Products and Watts Water Technologies each have increased prices 3 times so far in 2021. And we've still got, what, 3-4 months left of the year? While Badger Meter has implemented a value-based pricing system scheme for their select products, because I think their components and semiconductors are that much more, you know, in demand. That semiconductor shortage hit metering companies the hardest, creating supply-side headwinds as demand soars. We've seen U.S.-based smart metering manufacturer Itron, yet their Q2 revenues fell 4.1% compared to Q2 last year. Driven really mainly by component shortages. They've erased maybe 40 to 50 million in potential revenue because they were unable to meet demand for their products. And then, you know, going back to that resin thing, Advanced Drainage Systems, Northwest Pipe, Trenchless Technology Suppliers, Granite Construction, and Trima Chemical Providers all have had kind of their inputs shut off, impacting their overall revenue.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, like the metering companies, I mean, you mentioned several of them, whether it be Mueller has meters, but also Badger and Itron. Itron, they definitely are, I don't want to say anomalous, but they stand out, at least among their peers, when it comes to those declines. So that's interesting to see what's happening. I mean, they don't just do water, whereas some of the others I mentioned do. They're more pure plays. The Itron does electric and gas as well. So it's interesting to see that. So, I mean, that's one of the things we've been monitoring. We started really doing that, I guess, last year, looking at what are the top companies doing and how is COVID impacting it, not their businesses and their business units. Now, in a way, it's kind of shifted towards what's the impact of supply chain, you know, inflation and such, and constraints. So, well, Nathan, this has been great. Just sort of giving us some takeaways from the research that you've been working on recently. But before I let you go, what else is on your plate? What do we have going on?
I've got some interesting things in the pipeline. We're diving into the water for agricultural space, looking at both conventional, alternative-driven technology methods. We're going to be examining some facility data, looking at a number of different verticals, where those facilities are, what their permits are like, water requirements for those different verticals. And then something I'm really excited about, examining lithium mining. It's neat requirements for water. Lithium is a really important mineral for batteries, advanced technologies, and it's intensive, water intensive. It's a big driver for alternative fuels. So
yeah, that'll be interesting to see what that looks like, and also that water for ag as well. You know, we've looked at things like vertical farming, or looking at some deals, M&A that's happened in that space recently, but also we've been looking also at the broader agricultural trends, and it's probably a good time to do it now, particularly in the U.S. given what's happening out west. So, all right, Nathan, well, thanks a million. Thanks for stepping up. Good to see you by video, and let's talk soon.
Likewise.
All right, man. Take care. All right. So many thanks to Nathan for helping us out there. So before we sign off, just want to say, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and also give us a review when you can do it. Usually that's on an Apple podcast. But if you have any questions, comments, or ideas, or things that you'd like us to talk about, you can send us a note at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com. And lastly, tell a friend about it. We're still in a pandemic, so share the news, share some insights while people are just walking around listening to podcasts like I do. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Take care, be well.